Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It is absolutely, thus far, it is the honor of my career. Because I got to put a character on the screen that would have been someone I needed growing up. Because I did not have any character in the media that I was consuming at the time that showed me that my identity was valid and real. That's why people talk about representation. That's why it matters.
Hello, and welcome to The Awardist from Entertainment Weekly, taking you inside the year's top contenders for the Oscars and more of the industry's biggest awards. I'm Josh Rothkopf, EW's Senior Movies Editor, and I'm joined by my co-host, EW's Executive Editor, Clarissa Cruz. Hi, Clarissa.
Hi, Josh. Good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
So today, we are talking about the Best Supporting Actress race, and now we can actually talk about things in a more crystallized fashion because the nominations came out, and we know what we're dealing with. We know what the playing field is.
It's so nice to not be in this sort of free-floating zone of indecision. Who knows? There were so many people that we wished had made the bracket, but now we have the final five here.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like, you know what, though? I like the time when everyone's a winner, you know, like when everyone is like, everyone is like a prospective nominee or, you know, is on the bubble or may get in, may not, yeah. You know, like when it's kind of wide open. And as the season goes on, it just gets smaller and smaller. And then now we have the nominees and the nominations. So I'll go through the list.
Definitely.
We have Jessie Buckley, who everyone heard the gaffes when her name was called. That was amazing.
Right. She was the very first name called at like 5 a.m. on Pacific time.
Yeah, everyone woke up.
And we knew we were in for some kind of a crazy ride. That performance in The Lost Daughter that Jessie Buckley does, I think is actually the trickiest and toughest performance in the whole movie. The film is about a mother who's unnatural at it, not great at it, and has this kind of estrangement with her daughters. And she's played by Olivia Colman. And we see in flashback the moment when she was a young dissertation candidate, I'm guessing, and that character is played by Jessie Buckley. And we see her becoming increasingly frazzled and beaten down by the pressures of being a mother to two young children, and also her dreams of having success in her field as a comp lit academic scholar and rising star. And she gets encouragement from Peter Sarsgaard at a conference. Encouragement and more. She becomes unfaithful. But she also, I think that the beats that Jessie Buckley is exploring in her scenes are actually, they're the most confrontational and the most difficult, I think, for audiences. And she pulls them off incredibly because on the surface of it, she's abandoning her family. But she also does it in a way that you feel her dissatisfaction and you feel her pain. And Jessie's really bringing us into those moments and the euphoria of being on a trip away from the squalling kids and the husband. And you're ordering room service and you're flirting with someone. And it's, I think anyone who's taken a business trip will resonate with this character to some degree.
You hit it right on the head. Like, I remember right after I saw this movie, you know, she's on the business trip. She's like, I think she wants to order champagne, and then she downgrades to like French fries or something. And I was just like, I feel seen. This is me on like every shoot that I've gone away for. It's like just being able to have a quiet room to yourself and room service and no, little voices needing your attention, which she captured very well in that scene.
She's also playing those moments with the kids in a way that is, it's so hard to do those scenes where you have children who are saying, don't go. And she is in one moment, literally backing away towards the door. And I mean, it's tough stuff. And it also, I think, it helps to enrich Dakota Johnson's performance, which is in a completely different timeline. But Olivia Colman, mm-hmm. the grown-up version of Jesse Buckley, is watching another young mother on the beach, you know, maybe take tentative steps towards becoming what she is. And that's why she's remembering herself as a young Jesse Buckley. And so the performances all, I think, they work together beautifully. It's just such a well-oiled, calibrated, you know, mechanism, yeah. this script. Yeah. But Buckley is doing, I think, the toughest work in here.
Because she, I guess her character is the one that's most likely to be seen as unlikable, right. and unsympathetic, yeah. because she does the outright thing that a mother is not supposed to do.
And she's the meanest. She breaks the toy. She smashes a window.
I'm not saying that I've done any of those things, but I can see where the urge comes from.
Sure.
And film is about fatherhood. It's his own genre when it comes to men. But, you know, to see this on screen with women, I think is groundbreaking and important.
Definitely important and definitely underseen. And when you think about Jesse Buckley's career, which is just getting started in a lot of ways, she's really explored a lot of different parts of the range. I mean, she's been very sympathetic and understanding in Chernobyl. I think about I'm Thinking of Ending Things, the Charlie Kaufman. And then
that movie freaked me out.
Oh, totally freaking me out, right? And then her Romeo so and Juliet, freaky. Which she did. I mean, there's a lot that Jesse Buckley has done that's just shows that I think she's a real. I think we'll be seeing a lot of Oscar nominations from her. I hope I'm not jinxing her right now.
Yeah, no, she's great. But let's move on to the other nominees because there's four more. Let's talk about Judi Dench for her performance in Belfast. I mean, this was another one of surprise because all mm-hmm. of the heat had been on Katrina Balfe yeah. For playing Ma in that. But Judi, who plays the grandmother, is the one who came away with the nomination. And we talked a little bit about why and the mechanics of how this happened. So let's talk about the performance, which I thought was amazing. I just thought that Katrina had a lock on this. I didn't really think about it that much.
I mean, Judi Dench is a perennial Oscar nominee and an Oscar winner. And I think that her performance in Belfast is sweet and it adds a little bit of edge to it as well. Almost all of her scenes are with Kieran Hines, another Oscar nominee, who plays, you know, her husband, and she's the grandma. So she's supplying a sense of generational wholeness to Belfast. And the idea that community is going to dissolve given the troubles and given what this family is going through. She carries the final moment, I think, of the film as well, and sees her family depart. I feel like she's gifted a lot of special moments in Belfast that I think make her performance feel larger and rounder. I wish she had a few more scenes, if I'm being completely honest, but watching Judi Dench do her work is never unfun, you know. I think that she's wonderful. And she's also kind of tough on Kieran Hines in those moments in a sort of loving way that feels real. It's not a super doting, affectionate relationship so much as a real one based on years and years of bickering. And so I resonate with that. Not to reveal anything about my own marriage, but it feels real to me.
Yeah. I agree. And I'm glad you reminded me of that ending scene because that was a heartbreaker. The one where she's just watching her life go. And, I feel like that's something that's sort of universal among grandparents because just because of the passage of time, you know, like your children grow up, your grandchildren grow up and then you're sort of watching them leave because people move or people go on or move on to other things. And just capturing that, I think was heartbreaking and universal. And I think that really resonated with voters, obviously.
It resonated with the voters and she never would have been nominated if Katrina had made this bracket. I mean, we'll never know what happened with Katrina Balfe and if it was a question of category vote splitting, whatever. But one thing is for sure is that if Katrina had made this bracket, Judi Dench almost certainly wouldn't have. So happy to see her included in a character just simply called Granny, you know?
yeah.
Why don't we move on to another one of our favorites in this bracket, mm-hmm. Kirsten Dunst, who plays Rose in The Power of the Dog. I feel like we've been talking about this performance now for months and it just continues to grow for me. Doesn't that kind of colonize your head?
I think I might have to rewatch it because I saw it so long ago. I'm very thankful I saw it on the big screen, and I want to rewatch it because it does. That's a great way of putting it. Colonizes in your mind because these characters are unforgettable, and I think the pacing of that movie makes that happen even more because it's like, you know, you think about it, what happens? It's more about each character's journey more so than plot. Although there definitely is a plot. I don't want to make it seem like it's not like that, but but she was just amazing. Like, and her range from the time that you meet her, first time you meet her, and what her demeanor was like, and then sort of how she changes as the movie goes on and responds to the different forces in the movie, I think really show her range as an actress because you just see everything. And that face, her face, I think you said it on an earlier podcast that her face is like a silent movie actress face.
It is, right?
It's so true.
There is something about her that's very classical. For me, Kirsten Dunst has always sort of been almost expressly about a kind of vulnerability. She's a quiet sufferer, and there's a great tradition of that that goes all the way back to Greta Garbo, right? But also actresses that are more modern as well. Someone like Meryl Streep, I think, is like that as well, where you watch her in The Virgin Suicides or Marie Antoinette, and I feel like Kirsten, a lot of her work is happening on the inside. That's why it was so fascinating talking to her about her process and that interview we ran in the prior podcast, because she does a lot of work creatively and on the side, and some of it we don't even hear or see vocalized as viewers of the film that we're talking about. But she's the real deal. She's an actor, has a lot of chops, and I'm shocked that this is the first time she's been Oscar nominated. I think that she is deserving, and if I had to pick one of these five people, I think it would be Kirsten. I think that this might be her year. I think in terms of odds and chances, I think that she might have this one in the bag. But let's go on to a fourth name, another one of our favorites, Anjanou Ellis for King Richard as the fiercely protective Orsine Price Williams.
She definitely was a standout from the moment I saw that movie as well. And it is that sort of quiet strength in a different way from what Kirsten's performance was like. I just think Anjanou, like, so steely, so fierce. And I think I don't remember if it was in our cover story or a different piece, but just describing her role in that movie as like the backbone of the Williams family, because there are all these superstars. And then there's her larger than life husband, but she's the one that actually makes the family work. Because of her sort of steely strength. And I think backbone is just the right way to put it, because without her, there would be no center. And I think she, not just in that family, I think she feels like that in the movie. That's sort of like the strong center around which everything, you know, works because of that. And if that's not supporting actress material, I don't know what is. What do you think, Josh?
Oh, definitely. I mean, she's ennobling the film and making it more complex. We've talked about that before. I mean, just to get a little extra textual and widen out here, I'm really glad that she's in this category because we saw so much progress last year in terms of Oscars and representation. And obviously the supporting actress Oscar was won by Yoon-Young Jung for Minari, which was a historic first. But I really am glad that we have nominees and people like Anjanou Ellis who can continue that trend. I obviously wish there were more. So I actually think that this bracket is actually closer to what the bracket should look like. It's closer in terms of age and representation and experience. And there's a real breadth here in diversity. It's not perfect, but it's definitely closer to perfect.
Yeah, no, I agree. Everything that you said, the diversity of race and age, and that's always a good thing. It could always be more. I mean, I am. It's great that the best actor category has diversity as well. There have been a lot of strides in recent years, but you know, there's always more work to be done. And anytime that you see it, it's a good thing. But could always be more is my take on it. But speaking of that, the fifth nominee, as much as I like Kirsten, I love that performance. I think this one, our guest on the podcast today is the front runner, Erin DeBose in West Side Story. And luckily she sat down with us, very exciting, with our awards editor, Jared Hall, to talk about that performance. I feel like she's just had so much momentum as soon as everyone saw that movie, and there was a lot of heat on her. And you know, what do you think of that, Josh?
I think this performance is just the perfect example of someone who steals a movie. You hear that phrase. She's just electrifying and pops off the screen. And West Side Story has had a bit of a rocky reception, not critically, but commercially. It's underperformed to some extent. And obviously that's, you know, that's not an epitaph for it, because I think it's a very worthwhile movie. And I was a skeptic, honestly. I think that the first one is fine. I don't even know why we needed a remake. But Spielberg had a vision for it and made something that justified its own existence. And if we're talking about the reasons why it justifies its existence, we start with Ariana DeBose, who supplies so much passion and brings that character to a darker place than we see in the 1961 West Side Story. Her Anita, I think, is a definitive Anita among all the different performances on stage and screen. And we're talking about an Oscar winner as well with Rita Moreno. And I think that she really brings a lot of complexity to the film and grief and rage. The film became more interesting to me before her being in it. And I think it's also interesting that she is eclipsing, to a large degree, Rachel Zegler and Ansel Elgort. Again, this is just my take on it, but she's the performance that people have gravitated to in terms of the film's reception. This is a good one, and she did a great job on SNL. That's actually another aspect of this that we haven't even figured out. It's so early in the race, and it's so hard for us to make predictions. Any one of these people, I guess, with the exception of Ariana DeBose, could do an SNL or do more appearances or say something charming in person or do some interview that breaks out. And then all of a sudden, they become the front runner. Like, imagine if Kirsten Dunst hosts SNL. The whole calculus and the momentum of the race could change in the next month or so. So there's a lot of game time left, as they say.
That's what makes it fun. I mean, that's why it's a campaign. It gives us something to talk about.
Definitely something to talk about. And I know that Jared, when he sat down with Ariana, had a lot of interesting things to talk about. They spoke about her process. They spoke about being on set and working with Spielberg and the rest of the cast. And when we come back from the break, we will present that interview with Ariana DeBose.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Awardist. I am Entertainment Weekly Senior Awards Editor Jared Hall, and joining me today is a shining light of this award season, earning rave reviews and accolades already for her electric performance as Anita in Steven Spielberg's West Side Story. Please welcome, give a big shout out hello to Ariana DeBose. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi. Of course, really excited to be speaking with you because this performance, I'm not just trying to like brown nose you or anything. This performance is so wildly memorable this award season for so many reasons. This show, of course, is the favorite of so many, and the music is just so, it just gets you in a certain mood, a certain spirit, and it's truly unforgettable. So congratulations on everything that has already come your way, and more, I'm sure, that is on the way. I have to ask, though, you know, this is something that was supposed to be out more than a year ago, December 2020. So in that very long 1 year delay, was it kind of like agony waiting for it to come out? Did it give you that time to think like, oh, I wish I had done this differently? Or were you just kind of like, you know what? It's done. It's fine. Let be what is.
You know, I think because
we were forced into a waiting period as a result mm-hmm. of the pandemic. Of course, it gave me a lot of time to think about a great many things. I did a lot of thinking in the pandemic, mm-hmm. contemplated the yeah. meaning of life, et cetera, et cetera. But mm-hmm. I was lucky in that I did have other things I was working on. I made Schmigadoon during the pandemic.
Yeah.
We gave the prom to the world during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then I actually got to work with Gabriella Cowperthwaite on a film called ISS in a six-hander where I don't sing or dance at all. So I was very blessed to have my hands full of things to focus on, kept me distracted while I waited for yeah. the world to discover that I had actually made a movie with Steven Spielberg and hopefully mm-hmm. I hadn't ruined it. And just a fun fact, I actually didn't see the film until August of 2020.
Wow. So you, oh.
Oh, no. August of 21. Sorry, 21. Guys,
August of 21. Got it.
It's a running theme with me. I never know what year it is.
What, yeah, I get it. Trust me, right there with you. But still, that was a long time considering you were supposed to be out 8 months earlier to kind of sit and wait, were you like, hey, yeah. Steve, dude, where's my cut?
Well, and it's so funny because Steven has such great love for this film. I swear, yeah. while we were making this movie, he had the energy of a 12-year-old. And I was the one limping around. He's like running with joy and glee. And I'm just like, ow.
Understandably.
But he loved the film so much. He really kept yeah. it under wraps and took care of it. He treated it like his baby. So I'm very proud of the way he handled everything too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I feel like this is a question I could ask 1,000 actors, you know, which director are you dying to work with? And I think all 1,000 of them would say Steven Spielberg. So I guess really what I'm wondering from you is, what were you hoping that experience would be like versus the reality of working with him?
You know, I'm unclear as to what I was hoping for out of the experience of working with Steven Spielberg. Mm. I don't know if I had any expectations. And that's just from the space of, I didn't even think I was going to get the job. So after I got the job, I was like, I have no idea what is happening anymore. I'm just going to get on the ride. I think mm-hmm. specifically to Steven, I watched that great Spielberg documentary. And you see different parts of his career, and you learn about his anxiety while he was making mm-hmm. Jaws. And then
yeah.
you see some in real-time footage while he was making Schindler's List. And there's a moment where he's giving a note to Liam Neeson, and Liam's like, I don't know how to smoke. What's happening? And I was like, it's a line reading. Oh, no. And I was like, okay. So I'm just going to go in and be prepared for him to tell me exactly what he wants me to do and how he wants me to yeah. do it. And I'm just going to deliver because that is what is required for this director. Mm-hmm. And he blew my mind because he was just like, well, what do you want to do? And he let me run wild. The first thing he did was sit me down and we had a conversation about trust. And I told him, I was like, sir, I have trust issues. He was like, well, that's not good because
let's rethink this quickly.
And ultimately he just sort of eased my fears. He was like, I hired mm-hmm. you because you are my Anita. Mm-hmm. I trust you with mm-hmm. her. And I think it's the greatest gift that he gave me was to empower me to trust myself and mm-hmm. to invite me on the journey with him. He never once made me feel like he was going to tell me what to do and I just needed to get on board. You know, he was not a dictator in any way. He was a collaborator and a partner.
Yeah.
So that's what I got out of it to answer your question.
Yeah, I mean, and what more could you ask for, really? I mean, that's kind of a dream situation.
Which is also why I'm like, I don't know what to do after this because he was so great.
Right. You're like, set the bar. How are we going to pass that? Yeah, totally get it. I mean, you've worked with some pretty great people already in your career. So that's, at just 31 years old, it's a pretty mm-hmm. remarkable accomplishment, the kind of resume that you already have. Quick aside, on Jimmy Fallon on The Tonight Show, you mentioned the Pop-Tarts. brown sugar cinnamon. Can we give it up? They're the number one flavor. They're the best.
Like, seriously, if you're not eating that flavor, honestly, I don't know what you're doing. So
I'm right there with you. Okay, we got that out of the way. What have the past couple months been like? Because you've obviously been promoting the film, but then you've been receiving awards already along the way and more nominations and your fantastic SNL hosting debut. I hope you're just getting to take it all in.
You know, the past couple of months, I've dedicated myself to breathing. I'm really good at breathing in for four and breathing out for four because it's how I stay present. Honestly, here's a little secret. If you watch any interview and you don't see me actively breathe, I don't know that I'm there. Anyways, but
so if you take a few seconds here, I understand. Yeah.
It's been a whirlwind. It's everything I at one point in time said I wanted. I believe in the power of manifestation. You know, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, doing Bringing On the Musical, and I was sitting on a couch with my friend Adrian Warren, and I was like, it's a full moon
Adrian.
Tonight.
That's great.
Like another just black girl magic. She's such a queen. She's incredible in Women of the Movement, by the way.
The
story of Mamie Till Mobley. So we were sitting on this couch, and I was with her, and I was like, it's full moon. Let's write down just like anything we would ever want to do if wishes were kittens. And I kid you not, just about everything I said I wanted to work towards or aspire to has already happened. And I am blown away by it. Now, that's not to say I didn't have to work incredibly hard and learn a hefty amount of lessons along the way, but I'm just astounded by the power of the universe. And I don't know, just the moment I'm in. It's crazy.
Yeah. That next full moon, you better make a new list.
Honestly. Yeah. Well, the new year happened, and I kid you not, Jared, I literally said to myself, it's time to make new goals. You have to make new goals. Because I'm a different person. I've changed. I want different things. And I was like, all right, universe, what are we going to make together now? So when people want to ask me, like, what do you want to do next? I'm like, I don't know yet. But it's when I figure it out, it's going on my list.
Gonna figure it out.
I'm gonna
new
figure
list
that out.
Coming very soon.
Yeah.
As I kind of said at the top there, your performance just, every time you were on screen, I felt myself perk up a little more. I wanted to see the layers of what was going on here because Anita, there's, of course, just an iconic character, an iconic show, but there's something more to Anita here, which I feel like was all part of the script, I assume, or maybe it was part of those conversations when he said, what do you want to do? But in particular, I've got to say, since watching the movie, I've gone back and watched that America dance several times. And you can tell me if I'm wrong here. I feel like there's one thing to be, you know, like that close up and you're getting your moment, you're singing or whatever. But that dance, there is something about that that just is kind of breathtaking. And I don't know, was there a different kind of mood or atmosphere or feeling on set those days than other days?
Oh, I mean, I think the atmosphere on set was always extraordinary because we all were coming to work, but it was like going to theater camp. And Steven Spielberg and Tony Kushner are your camp counselors, you know, and Justin Peck is, you know, leading the craziest dance warm up of your life. So we had the greatest time. I feel like dance is, you know, I speak dance better than I speak English, to be perfectly frank. So for me, the opportunity to work with a choreographer like Justin, who is so pedestrian in nature, he is so invested in the humanity of dance and the specificity of connection through movement, that I just tapped into all of that and sort of let Anita find herself through the movement. Which is something that is, I think, rare these days. We don't make roles like this. Roles like this are number one. Anita in general is not written really anymore. but we definitely don't applaud or see roles that are steeped in dance and roles that allow dance to be used as storytelling mechanism in this way every day. Those, you know, not since really Catherine Zeta-Jones was like the last person to do it in Chicago. You know, you've not since the days of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and Rita Hayworth and Vera Ellen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Did you really get performances like that? And Rita Moreno. With that Jerry Robbins choreography. So I could wax poetic about dance all day long because I love it so much. But it's such a special treat to have been given this opportunity and also to have it received well, because I was really nervous that perhaps the time had come and gone for moments like this.
Well, I'm glad I haven't. But, you know, but that's an interesting point, though, because West Side Story is one of those, the original, is one of those movies that many people had that, oh my God, please don't ever touch it, don't ever remake it feeling. You know, like Wizard of Oz is one of those, and The Godfather, and Sound of Music. Yeah. Which you so hilariously spoofed on SNL.
I'm glad you enjoyed that.
Oh my God, it was so good. We'll come back to that in a minute. But you know, West Side Story is one of those movies. So when it was announced, it was like, oh no, we're really? But we're like, okay, well, but Steven Spielberg's doing it. So it feels like it's in good hands. Like, where were you in that camp of like, no, nobody can touch that? Or you were like, well, I'll listen to the ideas. I'll hear what they want to do.
You know, when it comes to the matter of remaking or reimagining classics, I prefer the term reimagining. I believe in revivals. We revive shows on Broadway all the time. And the whole point is to infuse them with new energy, new life, and most importantly, new perspective. And that is exactly what Steven Spielberg wanted to do. So if there's ever an artist that is inclined to do that, hit me up, because I think it's important. Classics are meant to be retold. I don't hear people complaining about the fact that we retell Shakespeare every other year with different concepts.
This, of course, is an extension of.
I don't want anyone to misunderstand me. I believe in iconic storytelling, like the 61 film of West Side Story. Jerry Robbins and that creative team deserve all of the, I don't know, lore, legend, all of the adjectives that you can, we use to describe them. They are worthy of all of that. And yet, it was not a perfect piece of art. Why? Because no piece of art is absolute perfection. Or at least that's where I start as a baseline as an artist. So there was always room for improvement. And there are some basics. The fact that you had brown face in your film. That's something that in a 2022 reality, there's no need for that anymore. You know, and this was also for me an opportunity to, for our creators to tell this story in a more respectful way in regards to representing the Puerto Rican community, which I'm genuinely very proud of what we have on the screen. So that's what I think about that.
Well, and I mean, that your answer there leads me into something else I wanted to ask, because then really ultimately, what does it mean for you to be an Afro-Latina as part of the main cast of this to kind of correct those particular imperfections with that movie?
It is absolutely, thus far, it is the honor of my career. Because I feel this way about The Prom as well, with Alyssa Green in The Prom. But specifically with Anita, I got to put a character on the screen that would have been someone I needed growing up, because I did not have any character in the media that I was consuming at the time that showed me that my identity was valid and real. That's why people talk about representation. That's why it matters. Now, it's been actually a really beautiful time for representation. We've seen so many articles about young people seeing themselves in Encanto, in an animated film. You know, all of these like 2-year-olds, 3-year-olds singing these songs, seeing, you know, their image in these characters. That's what it's about, because we're from a young age, the media you consume, it matters. So that is why it's important to me that young women, young Afro-Latinos in general, can see themselves in this work. And I'm very proud of that. If it all ended tomorrow, at least I did that. You know what I mean? Like that.
Well,
that sustains
let's
me.
Knock on some wood here. That's certainly not the case, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, no, but you're right. I mean, that's, you know, really the ultimate. We all want to be seen, and I'm going to butcher this quote. I can't remember who it's from, but it's essentially a, you know, be the role model you wish you had growing up.
Yeah. Well, and Rita Moreno, speaking to that quote, be the role model you wish you had, she has said Anita was her role model because she didn't have a role model growing up.
Right. I have to ask about Rita and working with her, which you actually don't share that many scenes. But did you get to spend additional time with her, like in just like music recording in the booth?
Honestly, Rita and I didn't spend that much time together during this production. We did have a really epic day. Gustavo Dudamel was conducting the New York Phil for some of our pre-records. And myself, David Alvarez, my gorgeous Bernardo, some of the Sharks, Rachel, Ansel, Mike Feist, we all went to, I think it was Hammerstein Ballroom. And Rita was there. She was dressed up. She looked really nice. And I was like, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, these like security guards come in. And there's Barack and Michelle.
Oh.
Obama. And I was like, oh,
no
gosh.
Big deal.
Seriously. NBD, they just had come to watch Gustavo do his thing. And apparently, the Obamas are friends with Stephen and his wonderful wife, Kate. And we all just hung out. And Rita, I think they were rehearsing part of Dance at the Gym, the Mambo, and she was like, Addie, is it too fast? Do you think it's too fast? And I was like, actually, I do, Rita. I think it's much, you should say something. You go say something. And I was like, I am. I'm going to go say something. And then she like sat there and she watched me and she watched my hands. She goes, you said something. That was good. So, there's like these little moments where she would empower me, and then she'd be like, you said something first, and now I'm going to go say something.
Should someone else be first? And then, But to that point, though, like empowering you to use your voice. So, I mean, that's what we all kind of strive for, to, you know, want to be able to speak up. And,
Of course, and feel comfortable in the spaces that you're in. In the 10 years that I spent on Broadway, I found my voice. And so thankfully coming into this experience, I did already know how to use it. However, the higher you climb, and the larger the room that you're in, you still get nervous. And so to have somebody like Rita just sort of say, no, baby girl, fly, do what you do. You will be heard here. That she did that for all of us. And that is something I know me and my colleagues will be grateful for till the end of time.
Yeah. Wow. Absolutely. You are have occupied a role. I think there's perhaps only two other actors who've done this who, you know, you're up for awards for the same role that somebody else has won for. So there's a really incredible history there. Have you had a chance to speak with her? Like, about that aspect of everything that's going on?
You know, Rita and I don't wax poetic about the awards of it all. Honestly, when we're together, she's telling stories. In fact, we just saw each other for a photo shoot recently, and we just, we were like freaking frack talking about theater stories.
Shooting
the bull. And she was talking about her time in London when she played Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard. And I am, I love that character and I love that show. Mm-hmm. And so to hear her story, it's like, I was just soaking up all of her energy, and she, there was such joy on her face as she was telling these stories, and it was that's how we really spend our time and communicate. But it's not that I don't think about the historical implications of everything that goes on in regards to this character. I got to make the movie, and it sounds cliche, but that was the win. Because at the end of the day, the movie's not going anywhere. I can't change it.
That's true.
It's out in the world. Yep. So, you know, I'm proud of the work. I'm blown away that I got the chance to make the work. We'll just see what happens. And you know what? I get to spend time with Rita Moreno every once in a while. And I certainly never thought I'd get that.
I mean, right. When those opportunities come, you don't pass them up, which could be the same for hosting Saturday Night Live. So now I know you're used to live performance on Broadway, on that theater stage, but does SNL compare in any way, shape, or form?
Okay. Saturday Night Live is its own beast, and it is a beast. But I can tell you nothing but my Broadway experiences could have prepared me for Saturday Night Live. It's the only thing that prepares you, because you are moving in real time. You're making decisions and changes in real time. We started with 40 scripts on a Wednesday, narrowed it down, went into pre-records, rehearsed every sketch, cut some sketches as we're going. You're working with the writers. People are coming at you all the time. You're just constantly pivoting. And then even during the live show, you're pivoting more. It never stops. And I was like, I must be an adrenaline junkie, because I love live performance. And I also, just because I'm sitting here waxing poetic about it, I have the biggest crushes on every single member of that cast and crew and producing team. Lorne Michaels, all of them, because they're just fabulous creators and really cool people. And they made me feel at home. And that's a really hard thing to do in the context of the beast I was talking about. So I had fun, and I actually genuinely, crazily, stupidly would love to do it again.
I mean, you know, you got that first hit of adrenaline rush there. Yeah. I mean, but you know, you're talking about having fun though, but it also, you could tell you were having fun. Like from the moment you came through that door for that opening monologue, it was like, oh, she's here to play.
And I that came energy to party.
Came to, to borrow a line from an SNL vet. Yeah, indeed. But yeah, I mean, that opening monologue. And then with Kate McKinnon, who I was just like, I don't know how Ariana is getting through this right now with her like spinning around on that stool and flying her legs open. And
Kate McKinnon. She is a legend in her own time, in my opinion. And I've loved her work for such a long time. And I was kind of surprised that they were like, oh, let's have Kate do something with Ari. I was like, what? Not because of like more. I didn't even know how to finish that sentence. Just more because I was like, why would Kate McKinnon want to do something with me?
Because she's required to. It's her job.
Well, it's her job. So yes, she was drag kicking and screaming. Absolutely. But we ended up having a really lovely time, and she's a consummate professional. I learned a lot. She's so just very creative. It was really cool to watch her in process. We actually laughed. I think I might have made her giggle every once in a while. And I was like, if you can make a comedian of that epic proportion, like giggle, then like you're okay. You're doing all right in the world. So it was, I don't know, it was an honor. Clearly I enjoyed it, because I won't shut up about it.
Well, then I'll ask you another question about it then. You said you got like 40, there were like 40 scripts on that Wednesday. Are there any like characters or any sketches that, looking back, you're like, man, I really wish we could have like gotten to do this one, do something with this?
Yeah, there were a couple, actually. There was a smoothie sketch with Bowen Yang. And I'm a big Bowen fan.
I mean,
there was a Judge Steve Harvey skit that Keenan absolutely just killed. But that one, I am actually, that will end up on television, I know. Just with a different host and no hard feelings, you guys.
Can't wait to see that. Keenan is just...
iconic.
Love him so much. Yeah, iconic indeed. It's been a great joy speaking with you, truly. This has been great. The movie I love so much, and I can't stop talking about your performance. I'm sorry. But it's just incredible. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and enjoy the rest of this ride as it goes.
I'm going to keep breathing. In for four, out for four.
Thanks for stopping by, Ariana, and thank you, Jared, for that amazing interview. West Side Story is in theaters now and starts streaming on March 2nd on Disney Plus and HBO Max. And that's it for this episode of The Awardist. If you liked what you heard, subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. To keep the conversation with us going, follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials at EW on Twitter and Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag us at ClarissaNYC1 and Josh Rothkopf. We'll see you next week.
This episode of the Awardist podcast is hosted by Clarissa Cruz and Josh Rothkopf, produced by Chanel Johnson and Sammy Junio, executive produced by Shayna Crockmall, edited and mixed by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.